In the ongoing World Baseball Classic, Japan and Cuba have advanced to the second round, along with Chinese Taipei and the Netherlands. The United States hopes to survive pool play against Canada, Mexico, and Italy and bring home their first WBC championship. Baseball is as American as hot dogs and apple pie, of course, everybody knows that. But some people may be unaware that baseball is also as Japanese as sushi and sake. Baseball was evident in Japan 30 years before the American League could claim major league status. In Nikkei Baseball, subtitled Japanese-American Players from Immigration and Internment to the Major Leagues, Samuel O. Regalado tells the story of what the game meant to several generations of Japanese in this country. The author joins me from Capital Public Radio in Sacramento. Mr. Regalado, welcome to Only a Game.
Oh, thanks for having me, Bill. I appreciate it.
What were the attractions of baseball for the Nikkei or first-generation Japanese in this country?
They saw that as a possible bridge to a better deal and to better learn about the larger mainstream society at that point. It was a way by which they could introduce themselves in their quest to live here permanently and eventually gain citizenship.
You write that for early Japanese teams like the Fuji Club, which was founded in 1903, quote, contests against mainstream whites were played with caution. What was the risk?
The risk was that there was a strong anti-Asian feeling during that time, largely stemming from the Chinese experience in the late 19th century that led to something called the Yellow Peril. And a lot of those feelings continued to resonate at the time that the Fuji Club had come together. A lot of the American ballplayers playing against the smaller Issei ballplayers not only came into a lot of those games with a degree of resentment towards anything that was Asian, but then to actually lose to the Fujis, or possibly lose to them, of course, would have invited even more trouble to their dignity.
You found newspapers published by internment camp inmates during the Second World War. What did you learn from them about the importance of baseball to Americans of Japanese ancestry who'd been imprisoned?
Well, it was real apparent by reading the newspapers, not only in the camps, but the assembly centers, which were the way stations just prior to the camps, that baseball, and in fact sports in general, had played a major role in the pre-war community. And a good example of the prominence of baseball was that a lot of these newspapers were more like newsletters in which they were maybe 3 to 4 pages long at best. But it was real apparent that during baseball season, of the 3 to 4 pages of these newsletters, often either 2 to 3 pages were devoted to the games themselves.
How was it that some ballplayers of Japanese heritage had significant connections to Jackie Robinson?
Those players were the ones that were housed in the Los Angeles area. There was a Japanese-American community near the Pasadena area, and that's where Jackie Robinson was raised. You had ballplayers who were growing up in the same neighborhood and played in sandlot games and high school games in which they were teammates of Jackie Robinson. Some were closer than others. In many respects, they faced the same kind of discrimination that Robinson had experienced, although it wasn't anything like what Robinson may have felt in the Deep South. But nonetheless, I mean, there was a relationship that was established between Robinson and some of the Nisei ballplayers during the period of the mid-1930s.
I grew up a Giants fan, so I know Masanori Murakami pitched for the Giants in the mid-60s, but you described the importance of the appearance of Ryan Kurosaki with the Cardinals a decade later. Why was that so significant?
Well, it was significant for a couple of reasons. First of all, he was the first Japanese-American to play in the big leagues with the Cardinals.
Murakami, of course, was Japanese, simply Japanese.
Right. He was a Japanese national.
Right.
The first Japanese national to play in 1965, I believe. And Kurosaki, being a Japanese-American, the first one to be a pioneer there. And on one hand, it was significant in that respect. And it was also rather ironic in that the Japanese-American press didn't even report on his groundbreaking experience with the Cardinals. I looked through all the Japanese-American newspapers, and there was no reporting of it at all, which, of course, told you a little bit about where Japanese-American baseball was by the mid-1970s as opposed to an earlier era.
One of the second-generation Japanese you quote in Nikkei Baseball says, "It's a wonder we weren't all schizos. Our parents were always telling us to be good Japanese, and then they'd turn around and tell us to be good Americans." Is it fair to say baseball gave people the opportunity to be both?
Absolutely, it did. It allowed for both generations, in this case the Issei and the Nisei, to identify with, in this case, baseball and their quest for assimilation. And in many respects, while they may have had differences, as a lot of different generations do with their political or ideological perspectives, baseball was the bridge between the two generations, a bridge that was found not only in the urban areas, but also the rural areas as well. So in this respect, it helped to strengthen the ties in the community.
Samuel O. Regalado is the author of Nikkei Baseball, Japanese-American Players from Immigration and Internment to the Major Leagues. The book is published by University of Illinois Press, and the author joined me from Capital Public Radio in Sacramento. Thank you very much for speaking with me.
Oh, it was a great pleasure, Bill.